The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. Let's start this last Friday of 2018 with the last Duff McKagan joke of the week of 2018. Take it away, Duff.
Hi, Chris Jericho. It's Duff McKagan calling you. It's Christmas Day, so happy belated Christmas. Merry Christmas. For Christmas, I got a jigsaw puzzle, and I did it. I was really beside myself. I did the whole jigsaw puzzle in 1 hour. On the box, it says 3 to 4 years. So, yeah. Okay, bye.
That's actually really good. I used that at a party I was at, and nobody laughed. So perfect style for the Duff McKagan joke of the week. Hey, Duff actually took the time to come up with an original joke and call it in on Christmas Day. Thanks, Duff. Thanks for all 52 Fridays that you called in a Duff McKagan joke of the week. And thanks for delivering the laughs and the rock and roll, or at least attempting to, the laughs, I mean, every Friday. Here's to more laughs in 2019. Wishing Duff and his family a happy new year. But today, we're closing out 2018 with some great stories and memories about one of the great legends of the business, and one of my closest friends that's been gone for many years, talking about Eddie Guerrero. This is live from the Jericho Cruise in October with guys that knew Eddie very well, Conan, Rey Mysterio, Diamond Dallas Page, and myself. We did a live podcast on the ship remembering Eddie Guerrero. We talked about the first time we all met Eddie, what it was like working with him in the ring, what he was like as a wrestler and a person, and we all shared some of the crazy stuff Eddie used to do and say. What, you think your shit don't stink? Hunched over. yeah, what a brother. DDP worked with Eddie in WCW many times and talks about some of his favorite matches against Eddie and what Eddie did for DDP's career. Conan, of course, grew up with Eddie, talks about his early days wrestling in Juarez in Mexico, El Paso, first time he saw Eddie wrestle in Tijuana, how Chavo Sr. first introduced Conan to Eddie, and that's where Ray first saw Eddie as well, as a wrestling fan in Tijuana, where he grew up going to shows. He finally met Eddie in Mexico City, same place he first met me at the Hotel Plaza Madrid in downtown Mexico City. That's a great story as well that you're about to hear. You're also going to hear about Eddie the Giant, Wiwito, Halloween Havoc 1997, the Lucha Libre style, and a bunch of other amazing Eddie Guerrero matches and stories from his time at ECW, WCW, Mexico, Japan, WWE. So here we go. Conan, Ray, DDP, and CJ remembering Eddie Guerrero live on Talk is Jericho.
Wow. Well, thank you guys for being here. This blew my mind. We were standing backstage and we looked through the curtain and like there's nothing but people here. And like I said earlier, your only job, your only rule for me is to have the best vacation of your life, okay? And so what I wanted to do on this cruise with all these other great activities is to do some podcasts with some people that are here that I've never got a chance to really sit down and chop it up with, as Conan would say, and talk about a guy that was very important to all of us and a guy that's very well revered to all of you. Of course, we're talking about Eddie Guerrero. And it's very, you know, it's emotional for us. I mean, Rey Mysterio here on the end. Who, listen, this guy jumped through hoops to be here. He has to go to SmackDown next week. He had some family obligations this week. He made it here. That's a good dude right there, okay? Seriously. Another one of my oldest friends in the business right here, Conan. We've known each other since 1992. And we got some great stories about Eddie and you. And then also here, another great friend of mine, DDP. who I wanted to involve because he knew Eddie from a different time. We met Eddie in the early 90s. He met Eddie in the mid-90s when we started in WCW. So it's a little bit of a different vibe of the different eras of Eddie Guerrero. So I want to start off with you, Conan. And I know that Eddie and you knew each other very, very long ago. When did you first meet him, and what was the circumstances surrounding that? Big pop for the microphone move.
I feel like Dice Clay. So here's the thing with Eddie. Chavo Senior? Yeah, Chavo Senior. When I grew up, like, one of the only Latinos putting it down in wrestling was Chavo Guerrero, and he had this really cool, he had this really cool suplex that he used to call the Mexplex, which I thought was a great name.
The Mexplex. Right. You can't use that nowadays. Someone would be insulted. Right.
I think I already am. And not only that, don't think I didn't see that you guys are playing Nacho Libre, all right? Anyways,
that's the first ever Nacho Libre chant ever. It was not a great movie. Anyways, go ahead. So Chavo was one of your heroes.
Right. So I had gone to see Chavo Guerrero, and I went to see like all the young high flyers that, you know, I think, Ray was also influenced by. You know, Cardenal, Thunderbird, Super Astro. They were like all on that show. And afterwards, Chavo stayed to watch Eddie wrestle. And so I went over there to meet Chavo, and he was like, yeah, you know, he was kind of criticizing him.
Is this in Miami?
No, this is in Tijuana.
In Tijuana, gotcha.
Yeah. And arriba Tijuana. There you go. So Eddie was in the ring, and he was kind of like critiquing him. And I was like, are you related to that guy? And he was like, yeah, that's my brother. And so like when the match was over, he introduced me to Eddie, and me and Eddie clicked real quick because almost everybody in the dressing room was mostly like Mexicans that just spoke Spanish. And Eddie was bilingual. I was bilingual. He lived in a border city. I lived in a border city. So it kind of just kind of clicked. And then when I went to Juarez, he invited me to train in his backyard and stuff.
Because at this point in time, you were like really like a big bodybuilder type of guy just trying to get into the business.
Right.
At a time when there wasn't a lot of those guys, especially in Mexico,
right,
where the body types were never kind of those big muscle guys. They're more, I always think of kind of the Satanico or El Dandy, barrel-chested.
Yeah.
These guys were in shape, but they weren't looking like you with the lats and the abs and the chest. So for Eddie to see you, did he take you seriously at first?
Yeah. And so what had happened was, is coincidentally enough, I had actually quit my job, and I went with his uncle, Rey Mysterio Sr. We went on a tour of like all these places like near the desert, and one of them was Ciudad Juarez, Chihuahua. And I had forgotten that Eddie lived there. And I just went with his uncle. His uncle went to wrestle. And they were like, yeah, who's this big bodybuilder guy? And he was like, yeah, there's this guy I'm training.
Was Gory still alive?
Yeah, Gory was still alive, yeah.
Well, Gory was still alive, yeah. Right.
Yeah. So basically he was like, yeah, do you think he could do an angle? And so that night they did some angle with me, and it got super over. And they were like, we want you to stay here. And then me and Eddie met again. Because Eddie lived there in Ciudad Juarez.
So, Ray, let me ask you a question. Just a quick segue. The first time I ever met Ray, and this is a serious, true story, was maybe early 1993. So that's freaking 25 years ago with a guy called Art Barr, the Love Machine. And that's... we could do a whole podcast just on the machine. But we were all staying in this hotel called the Plaza Madrid in Mexico City. And Art was in the room, and I was in my... I just had gotten there, and Art was maybe looking for somebody to hang out with, whatever it was. He knocks on the door, and he opens the door, and he's got this... he comes inside with a little kid. And...
wow.
He pulls out some alcohol and some other party favors, and he's like... hey, bro, he always said chewing tobacco. Chewing tobacco. Hey, bro, you want to hang out? I'm like, Art, come here. You can't bring this kid in here, dude. We can get arrested. He's not a kid. He's 18 years old. I'm like, this guy? You got to be kidding me. And it was Rey Mysterio. Rey Mysterio Jr. And he said to me, he goes, this is true. This is not, I have a good memory for this. He said, I'm a big fan. Hopefully we can work someday. And I'm looking at him, and I'm a nobody. But I'm like, this guy?
You were Corazón de León, man.
How much did you weigh then, Oscar, Rey?
Probably 115.
One. That's not kilos, guys. 115 pounds. And in my mind, I almost asked him, show me some ID. I know that wasn't the case. But Art's like, no, he's working. He's in the business. So I met you in that time frame in Mexico City in 93.
True.
When did you meet Eddie Guerrero?
I actually met, well, I ran into Eddie back in Tijuana as well as a fan. I hadn't even started wrestling yet. And he would come over and do shows in Tijuana under the promotion of Benjamin Mora, which was the biggest promotion at the time in Tijuana, Mexico. And that's when my uncle would let me sneak into the locker rooms. I had to have been 12, 13 years old, you know, and I got to see Eddie wrestle against El Hijo del Santo, Conan as well. You know, I never would have thought during that time that eventually we were gonna end up in the same company, even work together. Now, Eddie and I go back to before we even worked in WCW, we had our first match in AAA thanks to Conan because you pulled him out of, you convinced him to leave Arena Mexico, drop the mask, and come over to AAA. And at that time, that's when I was main eventing in AAA, and I got a chance to work with Eddie for the very first time. So it was awesome, man.
Instant chemistry.
Oh, instant.
Because one of the best matches that I've ever seen to this day was, I think, 1997, Halloween Havoc. Right? You were there. Back in Las Vegas. Yeah. Betty Boop. MGM Grand, don't go to the Betty Boop Center Bar. Actually, do go there. We used to have a lot of fun at the Betty Boop. It was Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero, and you were wearing a Phantom costume.
Yeah.
Yes. One of the best matches I've ever seen to this day. You guys had such great chemistry.
Yeah, you know what? That yesterday was anniversary. 21 years.
Wow.
Since that match happened. Wow. Yeah. October 26th of 1997.
You know what's incredible to me that I was almost at all the TVs, but I only saw two standing ovations. One was for that one, for the Phantom of the Opera outfit match in Las Vegas.
And, I love how he changes whatever, the name.
Whatever. Phantom of the Opera. Yeah. The Phantom, but we get it.
Right. And the other one, I'm in Iran. So the other one was...
Conan's in Iran. If you guys listen to Keeping It 100, you know what that
and
means.
So the first one was the very first time he went there to a WCW. I remember there Baltimore. Were a lot of... There were a lot of people going, oh, are we going to have a, you know, a minis division? And, you know, what's going on? Did is it a take your kid, to, you know, to work day and stuff like that? You know, and I was all right.
Huh? I was actually talking to my son about this yesterday because he had come back from Lance's school to be a
Ray's son is training at Lance Storm's school right now. Dude, he's... 6 inches, a foot taller than you. He's a tall kid.
Yeah, he's a tall kid. 6'1".
Negro Casas would say lechero. The milkman.
Lechero.
The milkman came in.
The milkman.
That's what Negro Casas told me once. Lechero.
So he said that he had Don Callis come out to Lance's school Storm right? Academy and was just giving him a speech on how the business has changed and how the talent is different now. And I was confirming that with Dominic and telling him, you know what? Just imagine, I said, back in my day when I broke in, my first opportunity in WCW was, let's throw him in a pay-per-view match. Opening match against Dean Malenko. I said, you don't see that. It was like, and that's
So that match, I was telling him, bro, You need to go out there. You need to represent Tijuana, Lucha Libre, AAA, Mexicans, the house. Go out there. And we were very lucky that, we were very lucky also that Dean Malenko being very professional, not being jealous, because, you know, it could have been somebody else and it would have been a whole different story. He understood, probably being a smaller guy too, and he went out there and did an incredible job. And you could see Hogan and Macho and everybody going to the monitor, and everybody's like, oh my God, what's going on here? And he came back and they gave him a standing ovation. Yeah.
How about you, DDP? Like I said, we're talking the early days of Mexico in the Plaza Madrid, Insurgentes de Reforma. You met Eddie when you were in WCW and you were already...
No, before.
Tell us the story.
When I was like Jake the Snake's driver, you know, when I just dawned at the side to try to get a little sponge to learn from, he got an angle with Conan in AAA, and you have to understand, Conan then was like the ultimate warrior. I mean, he was over huge.
That's no joke.
No, huge.
Conan huge. Was Hulk Hogan over in the early 90s in Mexico. No joke. Hogan, The Rock, Steve Austin, he was all those things.
No, he was, man. And it was a six man, and I was kind of like Jake's bodyguard. And when we came out there, and then, you know, I know Eddie through his brothers, because I go back to the AWA where Bad Company, when I was managing Bad Company, you know, Mondo and Guerrero's, Hector,
right?
Yeah, like that was our biggest feud. And so there was a lot of wow, okay, this is the other brother. The one I ever heard about, wow, that motherfucker's unbelievable. You know, and you could just see it. But the entrances, you know, that was before WWE did these really long entrances. Lucha Libre, I mean, it was 20 minutes to get everybody in the ring. But, you know, that's where I originally met him and met Art and, you know, started a relationship with Conan.
Because I had always heard, too, when I first went to Mexico, I started with what's the cat's name in Monterrey?
Elizondo.
Elizondo ran this company in Monterrey, Mexico, and he put me in these really small little tights. And these things were so tight, you could tell what religion I am, if you know what I'm saying. So when I worked kind of in that area, it was kind of an ECW of Mexico. And then because I was doing some good work, I got the call from the WWE of Mexico at the time, which was Paco Alonso, CMLL, to come to work in Mexico City. So we stayed at this hotel, like I said, called the Plaza Madrid. It was right in the middle of Mexico. And Hector Guerrero, who's Eddie's brother, was in charge of taking care of me because they wanted to make sure that, you know, if you have a problem finding out how to get to a town or how to buy a bus ticket or whatever it is, Hector will take care of you. And all I ever heard was Eddie Guerrero, nicest guy, best guy, such a good worker, cool guy, best guy. So I'm with Hector and he says, hey, after a show we come back, Eddie's in my room, he's staying with us. And Eddie was working for AAA with you guys. You want to come meet him? I'm like, oh yeah, Eddie Guerrero, like he's like super nice guy, everyone's told me. I go up to the room. Open the door. Eddie's standing there, just wearing tidy whiteys and nothing else. And he's loaded. He's drunk. Which, I never got to meet Eddie Guerrero the first time. I got to meet Eddie the Giant. Eddie the Giant is what we called Eddie when he was loaded. And
I met him. In the ring!
I go in the room, Hector goes, this is my brother Eddie, and Eddie's standing there. Eddie had like this, almost a hunchback, but the biggest lats you've ever seen. So he would stand there like this. What's your name? My name's Corazon de Leon, but that's just Spanish for Lionheart. My real name's Chris. He goes, I'm Spanish. I know what f***ing Corazon de Leon means. He goes, you think your shit don't stink? That was a big Eddie line. You think your shit don't stink? I'm like, and I don't, I'm like, no, my shit stinks. I don't. He was so mad at me because I didn't like, when he asked me what my name was, I didn't know, do you mean my wrestling name? Do you mean my real name? So about, you know, 5-10 minutes later, tops, he's passed out. Next morning, I'm downstairs eating breakfast. He comes downstairs and I say, hey, Eddie. He goes, hey, I just want to apologize for what I did. I don't remember what I did, but I'm sure I did something bad, so I apologize. And I was like, apology accepted, sit down. And we were friends ever since.
Mine wasn't quite like that.
What was yours?
We were, I didn't know, but it was Eddie's birthday. And we were in Tupelo. And we've been working a while. And at some point, I'm in the heat, and I hit him with some bump, and he pops to his knees, and he goes, come on! So I boot him, and he fucking doesn't sell anything! Come on! And he starts getting up. So I hit him. He goes back to the, come on! I'm like, motherfucker. And I go, I mean, I really go to hit him. But about here, I go, I can't do that. So I loosen up my hand, my motions keeps going. And when I hit him, I snatch him, I shot him across the ring. He bounced off a turnbuckle, hit face first. And I look at Charles Robinson and say, tell that motherfucker we're going home. And he went down to tell him and he goes, his ear's bleeding. All right. And I walked around, did some shit. I went to pick him up. He didn't move. I went to pick him up. He didn't move. I went to pick him up. Boom, boom, boom. We went home. He walked through that door. He kicked over. He goes, what the f***? Now, you've heard the rumors. I filmed every match I ever had.
That's true.
That's true.
This is in like 1997, 98, when no one filmed anything. He would set up a tripod and a little camera at the back of the arena and film every one of his matches.
I said, before you say another word, sit down with me and watch this. And when it got to one point, he goes, I'm so sorry. And now I smelled him. I go, boy, you are f***ed up, motherfucker. Awesome. So man, that was his birthday. I love Eddie. I love him. He made me. He helped me so many ways.
Can I tell a story about Tupelo? We were traveling together at the time, and Tupelo is the home birthplace of Elvis Presley.
The king.
The king. His childhood home is in Tupelo, and me and Eddie and Dean went to visit it. And Eddie, you tell him this story. Yes, he was loaded. He pissed on Elvis's house.
Oh! Oh my God.
I've never heard that part of the story.
And awesome. When I said, this is a typical wrestler thing, but you guys, when I said, and Eddie's mad, when I said, Eddie, you can't piss on Elvis's house, he said, F*** Elvis. Who did he ever beat?
Oh!
That's a true story. It really happened pretty much exactly like that. But before we get to more stories with the late, great Eddie Guerrero, how many of you got a purple mattress for Christmas? That's what I'm talking about. I know I did. And how many of you texted Jericho to 474747 to get a free pillow with your new purple mattress? Yeah, if you are, you're all sleeping like a baby, just like me. Yeah, that's right. You know how many mattresses I've slept on all over the world with all the travel I do for wrestling and with Fozzy? And I'm not kidding. I got the best night's sleep on my purple mattress. Maybe it's because it was developed by rocket scientists. We don't know. Mattress technology? It's not rocket science. Yes, it is. Because the rocket scientists made the purple mattress, and maybe that's why it's soft and firm at the same time. You feel totally supported, and yet you kind of sink down into it as well, get all nice and cozy. Some people say it's like a zero gravity feeling. I'm not an astronaut. I just say it's comfortable. Period. Period. Periodo. The other cool thing about the purple mattress is that it stays cool all night long. It's breathable, so you don't have to get all sweaty while you're sleeping. I hate when that happens. You're gonna dig this mattress. I know I did. You got to give it a try. And Purple's going to make it real easy for you. They're going to let you try it risk-free for 100 nights. That's right. Sleep on the mattress for 100 nights. If you don't love it, You can return it for a full refund. Plus, Purple does free shipping and free returns. They'll even come to your home and set it up for you and cart away your old mattress. That's what we all did. My wife had them take our old memory foam mattress away, and I don't miss that thing at all. Be sure to do what I did. Get yourself the free pillow when you buy a Purple mattress. And the free pillow is in addition to the amazing free gifts they're already offering on their site. Once again, just text Jericho to 474747. You got to text it if you want the free pillow. So again, text Jericho to 474747. That's J-E-R-I-C-H-O. Jericho to 474747. Message and data rates may apply. Text it now and experience one of the best sleeps you're ever going to have. Text Jericho to 474747 now.
Tell us about Wiwito. That's an Eddie term for you,
yeah,
right?
He just picked that out, and I don't know, man. He just started calling me that.
What does Wiwito mean?
It was more of a like a sentimental value to him to just nickname me Wiwito.
Is it a made up name or
it was made up? Yeah,
Wiwito.
Made up.
Wiwito.
Yeah. Wiwito. He all of a sudden just started calling me that. All right, I'll take it.
And that's spelled W-E-E-W-E-E-T-O.
Wiwito.
And we actually text each other that Wiwito.
Wiwito,
yeah,
yes.
We call it yes. In memory of Eddie. So when I think of all the matches you had with Eddie, and we'll get more into it, but you're talking about that classic with WCW, and then you moved into WWE where you guys worked together so much. What was you guys had such great chemistry. Like maybe one of the best pairings that I've ever seen in wrestling history. So good. Where did that come from?
That means balls in Spanish.
With the little sign, right? Huevos.
Huevos.
I think that just our the way we were raised, being second generation wrestlers, coming from a family that grew up in wrestling. My uncle being the one who trained me and you know me starting as a young kid. Wow. How old was I, dog, when I first met you? 8 years old?
Possibly. Eight?
Possibly. And he was
8 years old.
He was already training with my uncle.
Wow.
You know, I was just a kid. I mean,
literally.
So but when I was 18, I weighed 115. Imagine how much I weighed.
He weighed 15. There's babies born that weighed more than him.
But when you grow up in the business, especially back then, you know, you have a sentimental value for this business and you cherish it, you protect it. And I think Eddie saw that in me, took me under his wing, and just the chemistry, we just clicked. Having the same style, the Lucha Libre style, him starting up in Mexico, me as well, and then transcending over to the U.S., you know, and we kind of followed his footsteps, yeah, in a way, because you guys were in ECW, you guys got signed by WCW, then I came into ECW, then I went over to WCW, then you guys went to WWF at the time, you know, then eventually I made my way over.
Did you feel, especially in WCW, because it's interesting, times have changed, but at that point in time, I mean, you were on the top of the top. The rest of us, I used to say, was kind of the Indian caste system. Wherever you come in, that's where you stay. Did you feel that you and Eddie, and maybe on Eddie's end, because Eddie at this point in time, when you guys worked with the Phantom of the Opera outfit, was, and Paige, you can tell me this, possibly the most over heel in the company. Eddie Guerrero, during that time, 97, when he was super ripped, wet hair, oiled. But yes, but he could never get... He would never work. He might work with you because you worked with everybody, but he wouldn't
work. I worked with him before this. That's what helped me get the Savage. Like, he got me over in a
How?
Spot.
In what way? Tell us.
Well, if you take, like, 96, if you look at the beginning of 96, you're going, there's no way this guy draws money, meaning me.
And that's true because no one believed
true.
In you.
Yeah. Nobody. But no, all the way up to that. But when me and Eddie started to work together, which is around the middle of towards the end of 96, if you couldn't have a match with Eddie, you couldn't fucking have a match. But I'm really going to think that match out, knowing all the shit that he can do and stuff that maybe he hasn't done yet. I know he can do. So we went out there, and then night after night, people started to go, wow, wow, DDP's having a good match with Eddie Guerrero. So it just upped my grade. And then I went to Chavo because Eddie was going away to go to Japan.
For Chavo Jr. now?
Chavo Jr., yeah. And the angle was, I'm going to go out there because I just had that Lord of the Rings thing, which was bullshit.
I don't even remember that one.
Yeah, right, exactly. but the deal was I was just going over in enhancement matches and getting the finish over. And that's because they wouldn't give me anybody to beat in that scenario. And then they put me with Chavo. They want me to have a match with Eddie. Eddie slips over. And then you hit him with a diamond cutter afterwards. I said, how about I hit him with three diamond cutters? They're like, all right. And then I take the whip out. And I grab the ref's belt and whip the shit out of him. Chavo comes down, sets our match. First time we work, boom, he beats me. Now it leads to our pay-per-view match. Me and Chavo had a hell of a match. He was young. What was he, 20?
Dude, Chavo had maybe 20 matches when he came in WCW.
Yeah, he was young, but he was another natural. And we had a good match, and then I slipped over on that with the finish, and then it led to me and Eddie. So Eddie got me over in a way where I love what you think, but I really give a shit what they think in the back. And I'm not talking about The Office. I'm talking about these guys. I care what the boys in the back think, like, okay, dude, now if you just change this. There was a match where I was working Eddie in Buffalo. I will never forget it. And you know, Eddie, he always walked that line, even when he's a babyface, of being a heel. So they started chanting DDP, and I grabbed that mic. And I said, the last thing I need is you sons of bitches cheering me. And what happened? They shut up. That's not the reaction I wanted.
They listened. Sorry.
So Eddie goes over on me at the end. I go to the back. Scott Hall pulls me over. He goes, what the fuck are you doing? I go, what are you talking about? I'm just being a heel. He goes, no. You care that they react. You're a superstar. Start thinking like that. So it changed my way of thinking at that spot, that moment right there. So now we're at Halloween Havoc. And I've been beating up on Eddie on TV pretty good. He's supposed to go over 96 Halloween Havoc. He comes off the top rope, like he do, bringing down to me on the floor, keeps going. We get to towards the finish, and I go to do something to him, and he goes, diamond cutter. I go, no, Eddie, you're supposed to go off the top. Diamond cutter! Okay. Watch that match. I mean, it's from here down. Boom. Pin him, 1, 2, 3. He had torn, like, the white cartilage. You know what that
was. Wow. And the ribs.
But he did it, like, 3 minutes earlier. And he kept going.
He could have done the finish.
But he could have just said, small package.
Right. I'll small package you.
Right. Like, okay. But he didn't. He called that finish, which was not the finish. Yeah. Boom, 1, 2, 3. That's October of 96. My career completely explodes.
That's true.
In 97.
That's true.
That was a huge, like, goose, God bumps. It was huge. I never forget.
He's got goosebumps right now.
God bumps, bro.
I saw Eddie and Dean Malenko arguing over who's going to go over. And usually it's like, if it's me and Ray, the lineage of wrestling is like, Ray, I should really go over. And Ray might say, no, I should go over. These guys were like, Eddie, you're going over. F*** you, Dean, you're going over. No, you went over last time, you're going over. I went over like, arguing over who's going to lose. Like, I'm losing. Literally pushing. Because Eddie would get angry, push him. And Dean's like, you know, stop, I'll tie you up in a bow. You know, so all of this leads back to what I was asking you earlier, Ray. Did you feel that Eddie felt like he had something to prove at that point in time in 97 at Halloween Havoc?
No, I'll tell you what, the whole story behind that match, and you remember this clearly, dog. Eric Bischoff at the time was messing with me. I arrived to that show under the conclusion that I was supposed to lose my mask. So he had been messing with me weeks.
That's when he was on a tear that all the luchadors had to lose their masks. Yes. Lose their masks, right?
Yes. So I even Conan and I discussed the situation, and I don't know if you remember, like, don't go to the show. Don't show up. Tell him you were hurt.
Wow.
And I actually got a call at home from Eric because he apparently had found out that I wasn't going to go to the show. And he said, if you do not show up, you're going to be under breach of contract, and you know what's going to happen. So I said, damn, I got to go. Shit. I showed up. I was looking for him a night before to try to talk to him and convince him not to take the mask off. Nothing. Showtime Sunday, me and Eddie go over the match, have everything laid out. About 20 minutes before the match, Arn was our agent. He came over, and I remember he told us that the finish was changed. Now, I was going over. This is literally right before we go out. I was nervous. What are we going to do, Eddie? Shut up. Just listen to me. Just open your ears and listen to me.
I've heard that.
All right. Yeah. Just listen to me. So that's exactly what I did. I listened to him. And he put me over like $1 million. And we did things that night that we had never done before. But the timing, and again, that just goes to show the chemistry that we had. And we hadn't worked that many times prior to that. Mexico City, AAA, a couple times maybe. But just when you click with someone, you click. You know, you don't have to, you didn't have to spend years working against each other. Psychosis. Even though we trained together, when we started wrestling for the first time against each other, we just clicked.
Just have it.
Hoovy, we Magic. Clicked. Eddie was just on another level.
Yep. And another then, level. Which happens with all of us. There's guys that we meet for the first time, you just automatically click, right? But, like, to me, it was like you're getting one of the greatest wrestlers who ever existed, Eddie. Ditto with Ray, right? You're putting him together in a ring, and then here's the other part, which he keeps talking about, and you've been very good with this, so as DDP is... You guys weren't selfish. You were more interested in that the people went home happy than who lost.
Yeah, yeah.
And if more guys would have thought like that back then, the business would have been.
And Chris, how many times did me and you work against each other before? And we clicked immediately
Amazing.
Too, right away.
Amazing.
I mean, there was chemistry from day one. You know, we've always had that.
But we all came from the same, and this is not like back in my day, which was a Wednesday. Jack Slade's joke right there.
Wait 1 minute. Wait 1 second. Is that guy that you just pointed to, what is his name?
Jack Slade.
Jack Slade?
Yeah.
Okay. Jack Slade. All right.
Jack, come here.
Jack. This is what Jack did today during the... This is when you know you're a rock star. During the Chris Jericho concert, which was awesome.
Thank you.
We were watching it from upstairs.
Yeah,
thank you.
It was awesome.
Fozzy show.
Jack Slade came on stage, and his only job was to help Chris take off his jacket.
And how about the drinks? Chris goes like this.
Hardest working man in show business, baby, right there.
And he brings him his drinks.
It's my cruise. I have people. I have people now.
But, I used to have people.
But what you were saying, and we came from a generation, and I always respected you, Paige, because in the WCW era, which was my first worldwide company, there was it's just the way that it was at the time. I love all the guys that worked there, but there was a certain level of these guys are on top, these guys are not, and we were there. You kind of flirted in that area, and you were there, but you always showed up at the house shows. Nobody else ever did. It was always you. So working with Eddie and working with Dean and Ray and Benoit and all of the luchadors, and you know, we understood that, listen, we have no chance other than just doing the best possible matches we can. And whether you win or you win or you win or the few times I got to work with you, like, I don't care. I just want to have good matches. And Eddie was always about that. And he even told
Chris,
me...
Chris, can I interrupt
please,
you?
Please.
I have to tell you, one of my favorite diamond cutter ever... I'm getting ready to do the Malone and Rodman thing. And I'm going to work with Eddie on Saturday night. And we're the main event. And he walks up to me. You know how he'd saunter up.
Diamond. Always saunter up. That's great. Saunter up.
Diamond. How
hey,
about,
bro.
How about, bro, we do a diamond cutter out of a power bomb. I'll give him this one. I go, but your junk's in my face like there, huh? How do I get you out? He goes, no. He goes, just roll me up on your shoulder. So I snatch him. I pull him up. Now he's laying over me backwards on his back. I go, what do I do now, Eddie? He says, boost me. And I go, and he flips and he just slides down my back. And I look at him, I go, bro. If we could make that happen, that would be magic. Go and look. It's the greatest, it's called on YouTube, the greatest diamond cutter ever.
Wow.
He pancakes up in the air as I flip through, and it's absolutely perfect, and I go berserk. That was all Eddie. It was all Eddie. I just fell down. I just fell down.
Eddie, to me, when you look at his lineage and his career, like a guy that came in, there's Jack Slade delivering drinks now.
Jack Slade.
Make sure to check out Jack Slade's Pro Wrestling Tees, .com. He's got as many shirts as JoJo Feeney. But Eddie, calm down. My show. Okay. The thing with Eddie is that if you look at a, you know, he came in, let's say he came, when he came into the WWE, for example, he came in with Chris, Perry Saturn, and Dean. They were called the Radicals. And I heard right from the amazing combination. Now, if you look at those guys, Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, Perry Saturn, Eddie Guerrero, into the WWE system, who's going to make it, right? Right from the start, I vividly remember this, 2 weeks after they got there, I heard from a very high source, Vince says, Eddie's the guy. And I was like, really? Eddie's the guy. He's the one. Out of all these other guys, like Perry was all big, and Benoit was Benoit, and Dean was Vince, Eddie's the guy. Because he checked off all the boxes. He didn't have the size, but he worked like he was a giant. He thought like he was a giant. He could do anything, as all of us know, and he had the character and the charisma. And lo and behold, you know, Vince is a genius, and Vince knew what he wanted, and Vince made him one of the biggest stars in the company. But that was right off the bat, he saw that, which I always thought, wow, right away you could see Eddie's charisma and character coming through. You're talking about, well, first of all, before we go to WWE.
Which they hadn't seen in WCW in all the time he was there.
Well, they never gave him that push either. And right. I was a big guy about that, because you know I wanted to work with,
yeah.
I'd work with Eddie. But I wanted to work with Chris, too. And I wanted to make
Benoit.
Him. Yeah, Benoit. I mean, he was unbelievable.
But you were always, and this is not a you know, a Winston Wolf sucking each other's dick session. But you, like I said, like and you know this, dude, and you know what, too. We would go to a house show in Tupelo, and the first three matches would be luchadors. Right. And you guys, would actually, the first match would be me and Dean. And we would have to work until you guys got there.
Just get there.
It wasn't our country. We got lost easily.
There's no joke. I remember.
We had no GPS.
You guys thought, well, the luchadors aren't here yet. They're all traveling together in a van. There's eight of them.
So, oh, Chris, Dean, you went a little bit. You went ahead. We were traveling in a cab.
Yeah. I remember one time Psychosis somehow ended up in Detroit for a Chicago Hell Show. Psychosis is on his way. How long is it going to be? He's coming from Detroit. What? It's like 8 hours away. Dean and Chris, you guys work till they get here. And it'd be like 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. It's like, he would turn heel. I would turn heel. He'd turn baby. Anyways, the first four matches, me and Dean, then you guys would get there, all of you guys, and you would work with, I don't know, maybe Booker T or Bobby Blaze or whoever the hell was around. Then you'd have a couple, maybe that Nasty Boys match, and then something else. And then you were the only guy that would show up for every house show. DDP was always there. And you would work, yes, true story. This is not bullshit. And then you would work with whatever NWO member which would be there, which was usually either Virgil, Brutus Beefcake, or like, I don't know, Brian Adams or something. That's the end of it. DDP takes on the NWO. Virgil? Really? Right?
I thought you were going to do a thank you, Virgil.
Okay, so before we get to the Latino World Order, that was interesting, and the story about Eddie and Kurt Angle getting into a legit fight in the middle of the ring and afterwards backstage, let me say thank you, Dallas, to Diamond Dallas Page and his DDPY program. Thank you, Dallas, for saving my wrestling career and my singing career with Fozzy. This is a shoot. It's a legit story. I was told I needed back surgery from three separate doctors. I said, no way, Jose, and I started doing DDPY, and suddenly my back was completely cured after 3 months. So I want to thank you for that, Dallas, and thank you for coming to Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. We are going to be announcing details about the Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea Part 2, the second wave, coming up in a few weeks. But thanks to DDP for coming on the original cruise and not only talking about Eddie for the live podcast, but also doing live DDP workshops and workouts on the ship. It was awesome. They were jam-packed. And if any of you sexy beast Talk as Jericho listeners have some Christmas cash to spend, let me make a great suggestion, some money that you're going to get your money's worth from. Sign up for the DDPY program. It'll be the best money you ever spent in your life. And if you want to check it out before you do a year membership, then download the DDPY Now app and try it for free for 7 days. Dallas is giving you full access to the DDPY app and program free for 7 days. That's free for 7 whole days, 1 whole week. And the program works for everyone, no matter your age or your skill level. Remember, there's over 100 DDPY workouts for you to do. You can do live workouts with an instructor from the DDPY Performance Center in Smyrna, Georgia. DDP has got tons of recipes and nutrition tips on the app to help you eat healthier. You can connect up a Bluetooth heart rate monitor to the app so you can track your progress. He's even got his own brand of DDP motivation that you can call up to help you get going on those days when you need it most. Trust me, Dallas will motivate you personally, I'm telling you. And right now, DDP, to make it even easier and sweeter, is offering 30% off the DDPY workouts and the DDPY Now app. This is the biggest sale ever on the DDPY program. And yes, you still get 3 months free on the app with any DVD program purchase. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Get the special sale offer. Once again, 30% off the DDPY workouts and the DDPY Now app. If you go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho, and listen, if you're really struggling to get started on the DDPY program, then this is what you got to do. You got a little bit of a manual coming up, a step-by-step on-the-page book. Pre-order DDP's upcoming book, Positively Unstoppable, The Art of Owning It. It's filled with lessons from DDP's life, sharing his own personal struggle to find his calling and overcoming one obstacle after another. Unstoppable is a Bible for anyone who needs to be re-inspired to follow their dreams and take real action towards the things that matter most to them. It's a autobiography. It's a self-help book. It's Positively Unstoppable. Listen, it'll be out January 15th, 2019. But you can pre-order it now anywhere books are sold. So go check that out, Positively Unstoppable. Pre-order it now before it comes out on January 15th, just in a few weeks. And go check out ddpyoga.com/Jericho to get in the best physical and mental shape of your life. I guarantee this really works. When we're talking about WCW, please tell me what the story was behind the LWO. Latino World Order. Do you know?
No, I know I was supposed to start it originally.
Right.
So originally, I think that was an idea maybe of Jason Hervey and...
Jason Hervey?
And
why the hell was Jason Hervey coming up with ideas?
Yeah, well, that's...
I'll tell you what, I got to put him over. He had a really good mind for the business.
He
LWO. No,
he really did.
He's the first guy that told me about it. And he was like, yo, we're going to do this LWO thing. He goes, and we want you to be the leader of it. But at the same time, Nash wanted me to be in the Wolfpack. So they just decided that I was going to go to the Wolfpack. And he went to the... and then they sent Eddie over to... and I was so happy, bro, because finally Eddie was able to show... You know,
his personality.
Yeah, his personality. Because even in Mexico, and I remember I did a shoot interview once, he got really hot because I was like, you know, in the Gringos Loco, the least charismatic one is Eddie. And he called me and be like, hey, why'd he say that? I go, because it's true. He goes, you don't have to say it.
And Gringos Locos was Eddie and Art Bar, Love Machine.
Right. But we were like,
at the time, that's true.
Yeah, we were like the charisma guys, and he was like the wrestler, yeah. You know, the shooter, you know, and Art was that entertainer.
He's more of a Benoit style, right? Yeah. Just wrestle.
Eddie had
Eddie. Yeah.
Art did the talking and Eddie did the walking.
Huh? Yeah.
But at the same time, it's just like he grew from that.
Yeah.
And he grew into WCW.
Bro,
and they didn't get to that spot. By the time he got to WWE, he was ready.
To me, let me tell you what popped me. And to me, it was like, okay, finally they're seeing the Eddie that we see Because, like, for example, and we've all said this, how hilarious is Dean Malenko backstage?
Funny.
Has he ever shown that on TV?
Exactly. No. And so, some guys are like that. Brad Armstrong was like that as well. Brad Armstrong, God bless him, funniest guy
and
backstage.
Chris Adams.
Chris Adams, too, yeah. But in the ring, couldn't show it.
And so, you know, when Eddie did that to me, which was, even to this day, I still laugh at it, that incredible skit where he said that some luchador had stolen his wallet and he needed to take off his mask so he could see who it was.
That's WCW, right?
Yeah.
Go Google this. It's so funny.
He told the parka.
Yeah, right. So, like, one guy takes off the mask, put it back on.
Oh, put it on, put it on. But he would always increase his Chicano accent.
Yeah, yeah.
He'd be like me going, like, how's it going, eh? What the f*** going on? You want to drink some beer? Like a Canadian accent. He would do that as a Chicano, like, hey, put on your mask, vato. What are you doing? Like, Cheech and Chong shit.
And then another guy took off his mask. Oh, were you in a fire? You know, and then this other guy was like...
Were you in a fire?
Yeah. This other guy was like... So the other guy, like, took off his mask. Hey, you're a good-looking guy. Why are you wearing a mask? Hey, you know. Like, he went through all these gamut of emotions. That was incredible.
Good point.
What a tremendous why not on a podcast. But he went through all this gamut of emotions and in that one little lineup thing, you know? And I was like, okay, Eddie, show him what you got, you know? And he
that
was
showed it all right there just in that area. Right. Can we just please tell the quick story about when it was you and me and Eddie, maybe Black Cat, I don't remember who it was. I'm not sure what it was. And you were talking about when you went to, we were in, maybe it was Laredo or Montemoros or something, right. A border town. We went to a mall.
I told you he'd get me back.
It was Easter. And the Easter Bunny was there. And there was a bunch of people hanging around the Easter Bunny, but Conan got mobbed. And afterwards, we were in the room, and we were talking about it. Yeah, the Easter Bunny was there, but Conan, you had so many more people there. Do you want to say it or should I?
I heard whoever.
I'm so over. I'm more over than the Easter Bunny.
On his day.
On his day.
I told you he was over.
Conan is saying this looking out the window, and me and Eddie are sitting behind me going. And then, and I've used this. I use this with everybody in New Japan Pro Wrestling. He goes, just being in the ring with me puts you on a different level, bro.
How great is that?
We love that. We love that. Oscar.
I love it.
Listen, love you have to understand, I have never once called him. Like right. Kurt Angle calls everybody by their work names. Hey, Edge. Hi, Christian. Hi, Y2J. I know, whatever.
And right now that you mentioned Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
You were there when the Eddie...
Oh, tell that story.
No, I wasn't there. Well, oh. I was there, but I didn't get there until Eddie said the finale of it. But
when Eddie got in a fight with Kurt Angle?
Yes. Yes.
The guy who won a gold medal in wrestling with a broken neck?
Was there booze involved in that?
What's that?
Was there booze involved in that?
No, it was in the ring. Something... Like, Eddie would snap... he would snap. He had a really bad temper. And like I said, his line always was, you think your shit don't stink? And it's like, oh, shit. Now we're in trouble. And something happened in the match with Kurt and Eddie to where in the match, it was a SmackDown show.
Yeah.
They got in a fight in the middle of the ring. I don't know why. I don't know what happened. There might have been a miscommunication. Kurt was very green. Eddie was very intense. And afterwards came back and Eddie... You think your shit don't stink? And took a swing at Kurt, and there was a fracas, a brouhaha. And
Eddie called him out, right?
Eddie called him out. Eddie said, you think your shit don't stink? What's wrong with you? And there was an issue, and Kurt tied him in a Christmas bow.
Like that.
You know, and like I said, if Kurt was here, you could tell the story better, but Eddie would not. Eddie challenged Road Warrior Hawk to a fight. Eddie's this tall. Road Warrior Hawk is this tall. That didn't end up very good for him.
I don't know if it was Chavo that calmed Eddie down after the Kurt Eddie incident. And Chavo told Eddie will
man, why'd you pick a fight with Kurt? What were you thinking? Well, shit, I wasn't thinking, man. That's why.
Tremendous.
Oh, man.
Did you guys feel like, and you might have been back in WWE at the time, but I know you were there, Ray, for sure. Did you feel like when Eddie finally beat Brock Lesnar for the title? If you want to talk about a great match, go watch that. And anybody that talks shit about Brock Lesnar, watch Brock's work in the match with Eddie. It's a classic. It really is. At the Cow Palace in San Francisco. And Eddie wins. And he became the champion. But then I saw Eddie not change, but the weight of the world was on his shoulders. He would be like if there was a crowd with 10,000 people cheering and two people in the front row saying, "You suck, Eddie," that would drive him crazy. He really started feeling depressed about being the champion, all that sort of thing. Were you with Eddie at that time, Ray?
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, I never really picked
ever saw
up
that?
I never picked up on that. So he was more concerned about the two instead of the 10,000.
Right.
Yeah, no, I never really picked up on that.
Well, let's talk
weird.
Let's talk about when you did the whole thing. You mentioned Dominic earlier. His son now, how old is he? 20, 21?
21.
21.
Yeah.
Big kid, training with Lance Storm, huge future in the business. But I still remember him as, you know, this crazy angle where if you lose the match to Eddie,
yeah.
Dominic gets
who's your
custody.
Daddy?
What's that?
Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy?
Daddy.
Listen, like for me, like my rule's always been keep the family out of the business. This was very deep.
Yeah.
And you guys were carrying smack at the time. It was Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero,
yeah.
All based around Vicky and Dominic. How did that come about? How was that for you?
Eddie and Bruce Pritchard came, I believe it was Eddie that came up with the idea, and Bruce and him worked along with developing the story. But when Eddie laid it out to me, he said, "You think it's something Dominic would like to do?" I said, "Oh, he would love to."
How old was you at the time?
Dominic was, he would have to have been six years old, seven,
right.
Almost seven.
Yeah.
And, you know, when Eddie laid out the story, you know, this is what's going to happen. We've been best friends for a lifetime. I had Dominic when I was young, but because of my demons, I asked you to take care of him, and it was going to be our secret. You're the legal father. Never going to say anything. Take care of him. Only me and you know about this. Which, if you think about it, man, it's deep.
It's deep. Heavy,
yes,
man.
Yes, very,
sure.
Very deep. And at the time, I don't think I can recall of any other wrestler in the history of the WWE or WWF ever doing an angle with a family like that. My family was, I want to say it was probably one of the first families that were getting airtime. My wife, my daughter, my son, you know. So that kind of led into this angle with Eddie and the way he laid it out, the way Dominic played his character. And even now to this day, I asked Dominic, do you remember?
Does he remember?
He remembers just the words of, okay, time to tape now. And he would be ready to tape. He would listen to whatever he had to do and then go back to playing video games. Crazy.
I still remember, though, like it was so like, that's, you mentioned this, Conan, earlier about the lineup, how Eddie played all these different like emotions, acting. To me, watching that, it felt very real. Like, Dominic, come with me. It was almost like Kramer versus Kramer or, you know, something where, like, Dominic, you're with me now. Come with me. Like, Eddie was a great actor, and I think people forget that. Like, he passed away in 2005, which is 13 years ago now, and you know the legacy of Eddie, and the WWE's been great about keeping that alive, but when you're talking about this guy, like, his acting skills coming from a small town in Juarez or El Paso or whatever, he was great. He really was.
Like I was saying before, he grew with everything that happened.
He did.
He lived it all. So, you know, that's how you grow as an actor, too, you know. And
right.
What we're doing there is, if we're making you feel our pain in the shit that you know is a work, I hope I didn't spoil that for anybody. sorry.
These beasts in Jersey, don't mess with them.
Yeah. He grew. He grew as, by the end. I mean...
When people say to me, like, who's your favorite guy to work? And for me, I never work with Eddie in WWE a lot. I say we're the greatest tag team that never was in WCW.
I remember they put you guys together like once or twice. And
for
you guys
6 weeks.
Were great.
We would have...
And dude, you guys were great. It was incredible.
I called us A and Way. If you're Spanish or not. And I called us North and South of the Border. They put us together for 6 weeks. We had the chemistry of all chemistry. It was like Pillman and Austin,
right.
But they never gave it to the next level. But the point to me was, if you ask me, Chris Jericho, all these years of doing this, who might be the best of all time? Everyone says Flair. Everyone says Shawn. Agreed. Bret Hart, agreed. Deep down inside, I think Eddie Guerrero might have been the best pro wrestler of all time.
I put him up there no matter what.
He checks all the boxes. You know what I mean? Everything. Acting, character, work, creativity, fearlessness, calling it in the ring. Who calls shit in the ring now?
Coming up with great finishes. No. Bro, that's the thing about... That's the thing about Eddie, bro, that... one of the things that I had asked him is, where did you come up with that line from Latino Heat? And he said there was this movie called The Birdcage,
Yeah, The Birdcage. That's Robin Williams.
Yeah, that one.
And what's
the
other
cast
name?
I had to go through the whole movie to look for it. We're like, oh, are you afraid of my Latino Heat? So he had gotten that from there.
Wow.
Okay. And then the other one was, I was like, bro, how did you get into that? Because he just became an extraordinary character. And you know how shy he was.
Yes.
And you know, and he
very
told me
shy,
that,
right? Yeah,
very super introverted.
Super shy, man. Good
and
call.
Then he was like, he told me that he saw this movie, and a lot of you guys that have seen this movie, I think it's probably American Me, where Popeye is saying, "Give me some of that chon."
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
The guy that played that character, who is like super hateable, he had studied him. Check it out, American Me.
I know that you're talking about.
Yeah.
To me, that's another thing, and I want to ask you about this, Dallas. When you're talking about great wrestlers, you have to be able to be an awesome heel and an awesome babyface. Mm-hmm. And there's not a lot that can do it. Flair, terrible babyface. Great heel. Rey Mysterio, I don't think I've ever seen you be a heel ever.
No, I'm not ashamed to say it.
That's what I mean. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
You are the consummate baby. Eddie Guerrero, when he was a heel, people hated him.
Oh man.
And in one night when he turned, people loved him. People loved Eddie Guerrero and hated him too. There's not a lot of guys in the business, in the history of the business, that can do both of those. Yeah. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Really hard.
Don't applaud that. He was actually fishing for a comment.
I had to do it. No, because, dude, you go both ways. But so could Eddie. He can go both ways, you know?
To me, I appreciate it, but I can't hold a candle to what Eddie Guerrero was, you know? To me, like I said, that to me was why I feel he is one of the all-time greats.
I agree. You have to. What I love about being, when someone starts as like Ray did, pretty much a babyface his whole career. The only other person I know is like that, Steamboat.
Steamboat a great heel?
No, he was never. Just
longevity as a babyface.
I'm going right there, babyface. So, but Stinger too. He was Sting was. Maybe a heel early with that thing he did with Warrior.
Yeah, no one wanted to see that.
Straight, stone, stone cold babyface.
Wanted to see him as a babyface.
But as a babyface, working both ways. Like I said, working both ways. I enjoyed being that heel, and then I learned what the babyface needed. And Eddie... He could go both ways, and no pun intended, because he got what both sides meant. Who needed what? Like, as a babyface, you need that heel to take the time and not pick you right the fuck up. Like, let you sell. It's selling, and it's kind of because things are so fast today, not that it's bad, But if everybody just took another second back and sold what just happened, you would react way more. It's just business. If you go all the way back to the 80s, they sold forever. But Eddie, again, you feel you figure that out. And that's why coming from where we started, Conan, all the way back to, God, when was that? It was 93. No, I'm not talking about when we AAA with Jake.
93? Yeah. Was it Jake the Snake versus you, wasn't it?
It was jam, man. It was the guy
at the LA Forum or whatever.
Yeah, at the LA Forum. No. It was at the
Sports Arena.
Wrestling is just so very cyclical, and right now, thanks to you, another huge resurgence in all of wrestling. But wrestling was in a downturn, big time. And I had not seen the crowd. Like, Jake had such heat with Conan. Like, there was, when the shit hit the fan at the end, Jake was down. He had taken, what was the little guy in the white outfit? What was his name?
Aluche?
No, the little guy.
Masquerita Sagrada.
Masquerita Sagrada. He does the splash off the top rope to Jake, and he snatches him and body slams him and comes down on him, and the place comes unglued. They were throwing shit at Jake. At one point, I'm over on the ringside, and they throw a toenail clipper. And Jake trapped it. He goes, "We're getting the fuck out of here." And then they were throwing piss on us and all sorts of shit. It was
And the match that night was Los Guerreros Locos. What is it?
Gringos
Locos. Eddie Guerrero, Love Machine versus Octagon and Santo. If you guys haven't seen this match, please
when
go
Worlds
watch it.
Collide? Is that when Worlds Collide? Wow.
It's 1993, 94. It's one of the best matches you'll see. And you can see right there the genius of Eddie Guerrero. And we mentioned Love Machine earlier, taken way before his time, both guys. But what a great heel team at that point in time.
And if you really want to see how wrestling was back then, it was in my match with Perro Aguayo, which was a cage match. And so now Machine and Eddie have come out, which are part of our group, Gringos Locos, right? They're shaved, and they're coming out to do an angle in my match, and the fans are so rabid that now they're starting to fight with Eddie, and I can see Eddie going to the crowd, and like, you're your own security at that point. You
know? Not good.
A man for himself.
Right, and then I come out of the cage, and it's still on that, you know, like, if you look up when Worlds Collide, you'll see it. I go into the
crowd, I remember.
Yeah, and everybody's just going nuts. Wow. But you know, to me, bro, it's really incredible because when I think that, like, when I first met Eddie, and I knew he was great. I just knew he was great. I just never knew how great, like, he was one of the greatest of all time. When I met Ray, I knew he was great, but I only knew him, like, in Tijuana. I never knew he'd end up being, like, one of the greatest of all time. And
you never know at the time.
Yeah, you don't know, bro.
We're all just
same
brothers.
Thing with you. I put you in the top five of all time because this is a true story. When I lost the TV title to you, was it the television title?
Yeah, television title.
Yeah, in Chattanooga, Tennessee, that you were going to WWE and your punishment was to lose the title to me, which you didn't give a shit, right? Right. And I remember, first of all, an incredible pop. And second of all, I remember going up to you and going, now I see why a lot of people consider you a young ring general. Because all you cared about was making sure I got over.
I told
over.
You. He had this finish called the Tequila Sunrise. It was a submission. I said, dude, if you don't cinch that shit in, I'm not tapping out because that thing looks like shit. Right?
What happened?
What'd you do? He paralyzed me. He said, I'm done. As we wind down here, I got two final questions for all the guys here. A, do you have a favorite memory of Eddie that pops into your head? If you guys need a time to think, I have one. Ray. Okay, sorry.
This is somewhat of a sad memory for me.
Shut up.
The last time I got to see Eddie was on a SmackDown TV taping, and he was reading me a verse from the Bible. I've never told this story, I don't believe. And, you know, the following week, we were supposed to meet up Sunday to do a pay-per-view in Minneapolis and then fly overseas. That's when we used to do the charter planes. We would all jump on the plane, fly together. And Eddie, at the time, was living in Phoenix. So Chavo was flying on the same flight, and I was supposed to be on the same flight Saturday afternoon. We were going to connect in Phoenix. Eddie was jumping on that flight, and then all three of us were going to fly over to Minneapolis. I decided to take a red eye that night, so I didn't get a chance to see Eddie. And when I took the red eye that night and I arrived into Minneapolis about 6:30 in the morning, took a cab, got to the arena, and when I got there, that's when they broke the news. I was getting my bags out of the cab and walking into the arena like, "Did you hear about Eddie?" I said, "No, what happened?" And they broke the news right away. Eddie had passed away just a couple blocks away from the arena. I sprinted over there. Chris was already there. Dean was already there. Chavo was there. Dr. Rios was already there. And it sucked that I didn't get a chance to see him.
What about you, Conan?
This tells you everything you need to know about Eddie, because, you know, we all go, again, through a gamut of emotions. Sometimes he was mad, sometimes he was happy, sometimes he was drunk, but we loved Eddie however we could get him, because he was Eddie. And to me, something that really touched my heart was he was right about to go back to WWE, and he was, like, on the indies. And he was kind of telling me everything that had happened with him and Bicky, and that he like had another kid and all this other stuff. And we were talking, and I remember that this fan had interrupted us. And most wrestlers would be like, "Hey man, can you wait till we're done talking?" I was, "Yeah, what do you need?" So he went over there and he opened up the Bible, bro. And he was reading him some scriptures. And he goes, "If you ever need anything, here's my number." And I go, "You're such a worker. You're just giving out your number and telling people you're going to call him." He goes, "No, I gave him my number." You know, and I thought that was
number.
Beautiful. Yeah. Yeah.
To this day, I could tell you 1,000 stories, but to this day, I always tip waiters or waitresses 20%. Because Eddie told me, "Bro, tip them 20%. It means nothing to you, but to them it could mean paying their power bill or paying their electricity, whatever." And it's such a little thing, but dude, every time I go eat breakfast, lunch, dinner, you name it, drink at the bar tonight, when you get the bill, I look, if it's $10, I tip $2. If it's $50, I tip $10. Because Eddie told me, always tip 20%. That's what I remember. That's my page.
I didn't finish the right story. It's funny how I've been really sidetracked so many different times when telling that story about Eddie and at Halloween Havoc.
Right.
But afterwards, we're in the back, and I pulled him aside. I said, "Dude, why didn't you just small package me?" And he looked at me and he said, "It's your time, bro." And I swear, like, and it was so weird because Barbarian in that Lord of the Rings match, we ended up being together, me and him at the end, and I had to lay out the finish for him. And I said, "And then I'll shoot you in the ropes, you turn it around, and I'll do-si-do and flip you over the top rope." And he goes, "No, brother, I take your finish." I go, "Bro, you don't have to do that. You already took it earlier in the match." And he said, "No, bro, it's your time." And then when Eddie said that to me, I was like, wow. Yeah. You know, it just hit
true
me.
Bro.
You know, like,
true bro.
It was strong.
Last question. Favorite match ever with Eddie Guerrero?
Halloween Havoc, 97.
Phantom of the Opera.
Phantom of the Opera.
You?
I'm going to tell you something. I trained a lot with Eddie. And we were like way ahead of our time because we were watching Japanese tapes. You're probably from that era too. And so we were watching all the stuff that the women were doing in the 90s. You know how crazy
Manabe,
they were?
Toyota.
Yeah,
amazing.
All them. So we were like studying what they were doing, and we were just studying like what New Japan was doing, and we'd do it in Juarez. And I have all these matches that are still on VHS tape that I'm going to be transferring pretty soon so people can see it. And you can see a young Eddie Guerrero, just like there's stuff of young Ray that's incredible that I'm going to put out. Can, oh, you're going to pop.
Can we see a can we see a young Conan in Juarez with the animals and like bring, remember that?
And the lats.
Yeah. Conan the Barbarian.
And the dreads glued onto your head. My favorite match with Eddie Guerrero, not opponent, but as a team, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Jericho, Clash of the Champions from San Francisco, you guys can find it, versus Ming and Barbarian. Dude, I'll tell you what, this match was brilliant. And nobody watched it, nobody cared. All they talked about during the commentary was NWO, but if you watch this match, Chris and Eddie versus Haku, Ming, and Barbarian. Oh,
what year so was that, great. Chris?
97 or 98. One of my favorites. I love it. So
wow,
good.
Wow, that's very random. I'm going to look that up.
Dude, I'm telling you guys, watch it, please. Because you got two giant Tongans, not Samoans, Tongans, who were also
killers.
The killers,
killers
but
killers.
The best guys.
So loving.
You
so
talk
loving.
About guys that so just want to have a great match. They did everything for us. Such a great match. I love it. Thank you. Paige?
Just watching what they did at Halloween Havoc. I mean,
what about for your match, though? What was your favorite match that you had with Eddie?
Oh, that I had with Eddie? Oh, wow. You won't even be able to pull that up.
You don't have to. I just want it from your memory.
Okay. Buffalo. You know, it was like... That show, it literally... That match with him, I came to the back and everyone went like, dude, like...
Yeah.
You're like, wow. Like, again, it was, as much as we were entertaining the people, again, I cared about the back. Me and you sat there and watched later on Flair and Savage, and we were like, that's what being over is all about, not having
right.
to do anything.
Right.
And, own it.
Right.
And then but, 2 years later, you were there, which was incredible. Because you were like, I hope one day... You told me that yep. one day I hope that I can do the same thing and have the same reaction. 2 years later, you were doing it, bro. So you were like always one of the hardest working guys back there.
Thank you, brother. You know, but again, and this is a tribute to Eddie. It's a tribute to Eddie because each one of us have a different story, but it's all the same thing. The cat's going to be remembered like long down the line because people are going to keep those stories going, and because of you know.
Exactly. Listen, guys, we're done. We have to go. You have so many other activities, but I honestly love and respect all these guys. That's why I invited them to do this. And we love and respect Eddie Guerrero. So I'm glad we got to do this. We love you, Eddie.
All right, thanks again to Conan, DDP and Rey Mysterio for doing the great live podcast on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. We had a great time. And thanks to Eddie Guerrero for being such a great friend and a great influence on my life and so many others. We miss you, man. I love you, Eddie. Hopefully I'll see you on the other side, my man. The North-South connection, the best tag team partner that I barely ever had. So I love you, Eddie. And thank you so much for listening. And the wrestling continues on Wednesday as we get ready for Wrestle Kingdom 13, gearing up for the big show at the Tokyo Dome, Jericho versus Naito 2. And I got a great Wrestle Kingdom 13 preview for you with Fumi Saito, who's one of the greatest reporters in Japanese history, speaks great English. I've known him for over 20 years. We sat down and did it's not a best worst Wrestle Kingdom preview. It's actually one of the best Wrestle Kingdom previews you're ever going to hear. It's a huge show. Jericho, Naito, Tanahashi versus Kenny Omega, Okada versus Jay White, Ibushi versus Will Ospreay. You can check this out on New Japan World. Go to newjapanworld.com and subscribe now to see all the action at Wrestle Kingdom 13. I'm defending the Intercontinental Championship against Naito. It's going to be brutal. I'm going to end Naito's career at the Tokyo Dome. And if you're looking for a great movie to see, go check out Aquaman. I really enjoyed that. Just saw that tonight. And go check out Terrifier on Netflix. One of the creepiest, scariest horror movies I've ever seen. So that's what I got for you. Plenty more great shows coming up. Thank you for an amazing 2018. 2019 is going to be even better. Thank you for listening to Talk is Jericho, one of the biggest podcasts in the world today because of you. And I'm going to do my best to continue to bring you great guests from wrestling, music, rock and roll, comedy, classic album clashes, true crime, paranormal, all the great stuff that we talk about here on Talk is Jericho. I promise to bring you more and even bigger and better guests in 2019. Thank you so much for being here. Have a great New Year. Stay safe, stay hard, stay hungry. Listen to NHTSA. Don't drive drunk. Take an Uber, take a car, get a friend to pick you up, or walk home. That's fun too. Have a great New Year's. We'll see you all in 2019. But in the meantime and in between time, stay fun, stay safe, have a great New Year's, and a big yeah, boy! Happy New Year!
The Westwood One Podcast Network.